Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Sunday sit today. I'm really happy to see you this morning. And I'm Lyndall Johnson, as many of you know. And I guess now I should say that I'm one of the Sims assistant teachers. This year, as you know, we're doing a series on the Paramis, and our topic for this month is energy, or virya, as it's known in Pali. And I'm really glad that I have the opportunity to start this month on the Parami of energy, because it's one of those Paramis that I find myself working with a lot. And for me, it's one of the most challenging ones. And I think it's kind of goes to show that by the fact that this morning I found myself rushing around trying to make sure my talk was all done and organized, because I had not been so skillful in managing my energy and managing my time, and you know, being low on energy because of a cold, and then you know, just many things. But it was challenging. So it sort of goes to show you that even though we teachers, we may be giving advice about these paramis, we can't always even follow our own advice. And that's certainly true of me. I have lots of challenges with this. But even so, though it's challenging, energy is a really interesting parami because it touches so many aspects of our lives. It involves our formal meditation practice, our everyday activities, our bodies, our minds, our views, our attitudes. So there's really a lot to look at when we practice with this parami. Now, virya is often translated as energy, but some other translations that have been used are strength and vigor, courage, perseverance, and vitality. In Gail Stark's book on the Parami, she describes virya as a willingness to stay with something and as to meet a difficulty rather than backing away from it. And Norman Fisher talks about this Parami as joyful effort. And it's interesting, you know, if you've been following with these different books, for this Parami, everybody has a slightly different take on it, kind of emphasizing one or more of these qualities. But they all are really components of energy. And you get sort of a sense from all these qualities that with energy, it's the force we put into doing something that we're interested in, that we think is worthwhile, that we want to stick with, and that we get some joy out of. So our natural inclination, you know, with our culture as it is, where we're always thinking about go, go, do, more, more, our tendency to think is to think that with energy, more is always better. But that isn't necessarily true. The energy we're talking about here really is a balanced kind of energy. And the function of energy, as Ajahn Suchito describes it in his book on the Paramis, is to keep awareness awake when we drift into habit. And I think we might recognize from our own practice that the energy that keeps awareness awake isn't really the sort of intense brute force kind of energy that's, you know, trying really hard to make something happen or get rid of something, but more a kind of calm and steady energy that's alert and is observant, but still has a sort of lightness to it. Ajahn Suchito also talks about it as a gift of steady vitality that can replace the drive and crash programs of habit. And I think we're all familiar with that drive and crash where we're like, go, 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 do. And then we exhaust ourselves and we can't do anything for a while. So what does this balanced energy feel like and how can we cultivate it? Well, one place we can learn about wise use of energy and balanced energy is in our formal meditation practice. And I think some of you have probably heard about the seven factors of awakening, the different mental factors that contribute to our ability to wake up and see clearly. And they're usually divided into three groups. There's three energizing factors of investigation, energy, and rapture, three calming factors of tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And then there's mindfulness, which is a balancing factor that helps keep our energy steady because we can be aware of these different other factors. And we always think, you know, that we want calm and tranquility in our meditation, which we do. We do. But it's also possible to have too much calm, so we can fall into kind of a trance-like state or torpor or sleepiness, you know, that kind of state where you just sort of get lost in the pleasantness of the calm and the tranquility, and pretty soon we forget to be mindful and we're just out there in la-la land someplace. So the calm and tranquility are good, but, you know, you can overdo it. And for Vipassana practice especially, we really need that energy of investigation and interest and the feeling that our minds are engaged in what's going on and this sense of knowing and delighting in knowing. But on the other hand, if those energizing factors are too strong and out of balance, we might find that we're overwhelmed by all the different things that are coming at us or all the energy in the body, and then we get too agitated and we can't be mindful. I really like that haiku that I read at the end of our meditation. With its deep taproot, the dandelion stays calm as its head explodes, because it really gives us a sense of balanced energy. That deep taproot that gives the stability, even when all kinds of things are going on in the mind and the body. And when we don't have that stability, and we don't have enough of those calming factors, we can't stay calm and we get lost in the explosion. And it's probably especially easy to see these different changes in energy and these different factors when we're in a more of a retreat environment, you know, doing intensive practice or doing a day long. And so there's a lot of time to see when things are in balance and when they aren't. And, you know, even the schedule of the retreat helps to do that, you know, balancing between walking and sitting to balance the energy of the body. So the tranquility of sitting and the energy of movement. But we can get a sense of that balance of energy even in our daily sitting too, as maybe you found in our guided meditation today, when we pay attention, you know, to the shift from being calm to zoned out, or being aware of what's happening to trying to make something happen. And we know that we can make little adjustments too. If the mind is too scattered, maybe we should just focus on the breath for a while. Or if we're feeling so calm, we start to fall asleep and zone out, you know, maybe we need to add a little more investigation. And, you know, when things are out of balance, we might notice that hindrances come up. Tranquility shifts into sloth and torpor. Investigation and interest and rapture can shift into craving and aversion, you know, trying to make things happen or get rid of something, or maybe restlessness or agitation. But we also can understand that these different fluctuations in energy, a lot of these are just natural responses to the conditions that we're in. Not so much that we're doing something wrong or bad meditators, but, you know, things change in this way, and we can recognize these fluctuations and accommodate them. I mean, one of my teachers, Steve Armstrong, I remember telling us that it's like we're almost never really on course, but because we can make these small course adjustments, we eventually get to where we're going. So this kind of understanding about, you know, fluctuating energy and balance of energy can transfer over into our Dharma practice, not just on the cushion, but in daily activities. and in our life. And I think this is the place where working with energy can really be challenging. So one of the things that Ajahn Suchito says about energy is that we shouldn't think so much about trying to get more energy, but more about learning how to regulate the energy we have, to conserve it and not dissipate it on things that aren't really helpful. So part of that understanding is to know the things that help you to maintain a balanced energy and the things that deplete you or overstimulate you. So this is a whole area of investigation in itself. Taking care of the body is definitely important. Eating a healthy diet, getting enough exercise, getting enough sleep. So we can ask ourselves, are we doing what's needed here? And also, those times when our energy is more limited because we're sick or maybe have been under a lot of stress, we can ask ourselves too, are we willing to take that into account? Maybe adjust our activities as we need to. And when it comes to our minds, we can be aware of the kinds of mental activities that lead us to restlessness and agitation. Maybe flooding our minds with information or stimulation, so it's hard to find any quiet. I think a lot of us have talked about being overly flooded with the news. It's good to be informed, but we can go overboard, so we just get agitated and or maybe just the mental habits of worry. We might also have the tendency to be more moving toward that zoning out quality where we have habits that cause us to disconnect. Maybe things like binge watching movies or binge reading novels or other kinds of things like that, where we just sort of get lost in these distractions instead of doing things that might be more useful for us. And in her book on the Paramis, Creating a Life of Integrity, Gail Stark talks about exploring our distractions as part of this process. So we really notice those things that we do to distract the mind and to avoid what's happening and to procrastinate. So that leads us into the mental attitudes that influence our energy levels. So the attitude of faith is one mental attitude that's really an important support for energy. If we have a sense that something is worth doing, that it's possible for us to do it, and we have a certain level of clarity about how to do it, then we usually have energy to do it. We're motivated to do it. But on the other hand, when we're full of doubt and confusion, we're kind of feeling like, I probably can't do this, I'm probably going to do it all wrong. Well, there's not a lot of energy behind what we're doing. That kind of attitude of doubt and confusion really depletes your energy. And I know for me, when it comes to my own practice, the times when I feel the most sluggish and the most unmotivated are the times when there's some kind of doubt, when I feel, that somehow I can't do this. This is beyond me. And that's true of everyday activities too. What are the things I avoid the most? And where do I procrastinate the most? I mean, sometimes it's stuff I just plain don't like, but a lot of the times it's things where I have this feeling of, I can't do this, I can't do it well enough. This sort of, it should be perfect, but I can't make it perfect, so I'm maybe gonna not go there. So for me, I really need to pay attention to that hindrance of doubt, and maybe some of you have that tendency too. But another thing to notice is when we go in the opposite direction and we're over-efforting or pushing too hard, we might think we're showing persistence and courage, and sometimes we are, but if we keep pushing and pushing past the point where we have a sense of interest and of joyful effort, then all of that efforting can really be counterproductive, and we find ourselves stuck in tiredness, weariness, resentfulness, frustration, and then we crash and burn and can't do anything. Gail Stark has a really great example of this in her book that I can relate to, and I think many of you can too. She talks about working in her garden, which is something she generally enjoys, but where she's also prone to push. And, you know, she mentions how she starts out working and feeling enthusiastic about being outside in the fresh air, enjoying the exercise, enjoying the nature. But as she keeps going and going, she starts to feel tired and frustrated and anxious. She can't get everything done she wants to get done. And pretty soon, she's moved into what she calls the unwholesome state of crankiness, which I think we know that's that state, don't we? And so when she recognizes what's going on, she realizes that the time to stop with the task isn't necessarily when the task is finished, but when we get to the limits of where we can continue that task with some interest and enjoyment. So she does stop, and then she goes on to cook her dinner and do the other things she has planned for that evening, feeling energized rather than deflated. And, you know, sometimes we can't do that. We really have to finish something. But I think this is a really nice tip and something I know I want to try out. You know, noticing my attitude rather than what have I completed and accomplished, and maybe being able to recognize that when I really do get tired and frustrated, I've done enough for today. So you might want to look into that as well. And if we look, we often find that both of these extremes, you know, the doubt and avoidance and the over-efforting, both of them really come out of some form of attachment to becoming. You know, we want to do this right. We want to be successful, to be seen as skillful. You know, we want to live up to this image we have of what we ought to be. And we're paying more attention to that and our ideas about what we're supposed to achieve than actually being mindful of what's going on. So we push and push until we crash when things don't unfold according to our plan, or we're too afraid that we can't do it right to really get started. So those are two tendencies to think about. And with these things, you know, with our bodies, our minds, and our mental attitudes in view, Ajahn Suchito has some really helpful suggestions for regulating our energy that I want to pass on. And he says, you know, first to set wise boundaries based on our understanding of what's really going to help us at this time. So it could be saying, in the example I gave earlier, just gave about the gardening, to say, no, I don't have to do that right now. I've done enough. Or maybe being able to say, this is draining my energy and I should avoid it. Or maybe it's making a firm commitment. Yes, I'm going to do this. I know it's to my benefit, and all of this wavering and indecision is really draining my energy. So next, we really need to know our true interests and ask ourselves whether our energy comes from really being interested and willing and wholeheartedly on board with something, or are we caught up in trying to do what we think we're supposed to do, whether our heart is in it or not? Are we pushing to try to prove something to ourselves, to live up to some idea we have about ourselves? Or is it coming from a real sense of interest and connection? And then there's what he calls the yes boundary, which is when you do have a sense of your true interests, being willing to commit. And for this, you need faith. And maybe this is a place too where we might be calling upon the courage and persistent aspects of energy. So here is the place where we need to put aside that hindrance of doubt and all those worries about whether we'll succeed and do everything right and how it's going to turn out. And just know, this is really for my benefit. This is really what I connect with and I'm interested in and I want for myself, and move forward step by step. So there's lots of work with the Parami of energy, lots of ways we can work with it. We can look at these shifts of energy in our formal meditation and understand more about that balance between energizing factors and calming factors. We can look at how we regulate and manage our energy, looking at our bodies and our minds too. We can understand where our true interests really are, as opposed to the interests we think we are supposed to have, even if they aren't quite where we are. And we can explore our attitudes. Maybe we'll see how doubt and confusion are dissipating our energy. Or on the other hand, we might see how over-efforting, because we're so anxious to get somewhere or be something, that we're causing ourselves to be frustrated and resentful. And then just finally, crashing and burning. And we can bring in the other paramis we've worked with too. We need wisdom to really look at what's needed for balanced energy and to recognize the forces that cause our energy to get out of balance. And we need renunciation to set wise boundaries around those kinds of things. So this just really gives you kind of a taste of all the various things that we can explore with this parami. And I feel like I've covered a lot of things, you know, but there's a lot of things to think about too. And with the other teachers, we'll be expanding on, you know, different faces of this topic of energy in the coming weeks. So you'll have plenty of time to hear more about it. And I invite you then on this month's adventure with this challenging but really interesting parami of energy. And so for this week, you know, maybe you can maybe look at one of these aspects and explore, maybe just taking the week to look at your own energy levels as you go through your life and your sitting practice and your daily activities, and getting the lay of the land might be a really good thing to do for this week. So, thank you all for listening. Maybe taking a moment to just sit quietly and connect with our deep taproot. So now we have some time for our small group discussion for people that are able to stay today. Okay. So for our discussion today, I invite you to share something about this topic of energy, maybe sharing something about how you experience energy yourself, you know, your challenges with it, maybe some aspect that you think you want to understand more about that I've talked about, maybe something about whether your tendency is to be the sluggish and avoid, or the push, push, push. Whatever is coming up for you with this topic of energy as we begin to get into it, and whatever really, you know, kind of stimulates more energy in you to investigate it. So now we have some time to share anything that you have been talking about in your groups, or questions you have, or comments you have. So you can let me know that you have something to say. Probably the easiest way is to raise your virtual hand, but since everybody is in the view, if you just go like that, I can see you too. But the virtual hand is always good. Okay, so Jean, please unmute yourself and go ahead.
We enjoyed the dandelion haiku. I think we just realized this is a very rich subject for us to explore that as we go through this month, we're going to have a lot to learn and experience. So just off the cuff, that was my comment. I enjoyed the talk. I enjoyed your vision, and I'm thinking about the point that you made about applying our energy, if it's of interest to us, if it's a true interest, and if it's beneficial. Because I can certainly find myself spending energy doing things that are not beneficial. So it's a
Yes.
rich area.
It is a really rich area, very rich area. And, don't we all spend energy doing things that aren't beneficial for various ways? So just investigating that whole area of what we do and why we do it, there's a lot there. There's really a lot there. So thank you, Jean.
Thank you.
Judith?
Yeah, I was thinking about the things that I don't have any interest in doing and don't want to do at all, but I think I need to do, and the kind of energy that goes into those. Like, well, the examples I used were going to the dentist or dealing with the bureaucracy in any form whatsoever. And it's like, I know I'm going to pay a price down the road if I don't do these things, and but oh my God, it seems like I get more and more resistant to doing them, So how do you deal with those things energy-wise? They take
Yeah, those. I think those are our hard things, and some of the ones you bring up are things that, well, like going to the dentist. Well, yeah, I mean, there's no question that it's beneficial. In a way, I'm kind of reminded of the renunciation. When the Buddha was talking about, well, yes, I understood it was a good thing, but my heart didn't leap.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. I mean, in a certain way, with some of them, I think, like with the dentist and things like that, I don't like it either. But yet I know when I get it done, there's a sense of relief that it's taken care of, that it's okay. And then others might have other suggestions too, but one of the things that I'm beginning to realize I need to do is when I do one of those things that I really have to do, but I'm really resistant to doing it, is to give myself plenty of space to relax after I do it. It's sort of like, okay, this is going to deplete me, so let me rest, or to maybe do like sort of that example with the gardening. Do a little bit and then stop, and then do a little bit and stop. But yeah, those are challenging things, and we do have to deal with them. I mean, those are challenging as well as the things that we do just because we think we're supposed to, even if we don't really need to. So thank you
Yeah.
for bringing that up. Yeah, it's a challenging place, definitely.
Yeah, and we need some discernment to be able to tell, okay, am I just doing this that I don't really need to do this, but I feel I should, or is it something I really had better do, even though I don't want to? That
Yeah, it really does. It really does require discernment and wisdom.
Yeah.
So a lot comes into it. Anybody else? Lauren. Oh, you're still
Yeah.
muted, Lauren.
I
Okay, wait.
like the point of exploring our attitudes when we're expressing or not expressing energy. So seeing the relationship between energy and attitude, and I was what I we talked a lot about gardens and growing in our group, and I was thinking about liking to be out in the garden. I'm interested in the garden. This is, something that is so understand true interest, but I can easily get caught into kind of being driven. Like it's got to be, I've got to do just the next thing. I'm not satisfied with this one. I see those weeds and I got to get to that one. And sometimes that energy that is joyful and flowing when I first go into the garden becomes clenched teeth and driven, and I can't stop. Like you talked about stopping before, sometimes you want to stop before the job is done. And I have trouble sometimes, and there's a shift in my attitude. So I have made a commitment to myself that this week, as you suggested, I'm going to really try to look at my attitude and my energy together. And I plan to keep it a little journal. We'll see if I can do that, but that's my intention.
Yes, thank you, Lauren. I mean, I feel like that's one of the things I need to work on too, because I have those same, some of those same issues, or just a sense of getting, like with me in the garden, it's sort of like I'm interested and enthusiastic, but then it's less that I just keep going and going and going, and more that I just feel overwhelmed, and then I throw up my hands and don't want to do anything. So I think we're going to be doing a lot of exploring our attitudes about our gardens. But I think it's interesting with this that it the these they affect our attitudes towards our Dharma practice, but they also affect our attitudes towards all the different things that we do in our daily life, which are also really part of our practice. So it's interesting, yeah. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Well, maybe if there's not anybody that has a comment right away, this might be a good time to go ahead and finish with this and go on to announcements, because we've got a lot of announcements. There's a lot of stuff going on. And so we're almost at the end of our time. So I'll just briefly mention that if you want to, you can always have the opportunity to express your gratitude and support for SIMS and for the Dharma by offering Dana on our website. And your contributions in terms of financial resources or your time volunteering are really appreciated. And I hope everybody knows how grateful everyone, all of the teachers are, but also I think all of us in the community can be grateful to each other for the support that we all give. So let's just sit for a few moments to close, recognizing that getting together like this, practicing together, really generates a field of merit that we can share with those near to us and with those far. So sharing this force for goodness with our loved ones, with the people we don't know, with the people that are difficult, with all beings. May all beings, whoever they are, share in the merit of our practice. May we be happy and peaceful, and may our hearts be at ease.
Thank you, everybody. Be
Thanks,
well.
everybody, for coming
Have a good
today.
one.